Why do I conduct my show on this matter, Mundo?
Sweet mother of God, what is the holdup?
Eleanor!
Once again, something wonderful in my life has been turned into a giant crap fest.
Mundo!
Got a little bit more cock for you here.
Eleanor!
Bowtie boy got the big snaggeroonie.
Mundo!
All six of my nipples are tingling.
Eleanor!
See why America loves him so much?
Mundo!
I'd like to smash you in the face with my shillelagh.
Eleanor!
I have no idea what's going on.
Mundo!
He was lying.
He said he never tells a lie.
He was lying when he said that.
Eleanor!
I want a cup.
Well, could you spell that?
C-U-P. I want to see you. Oh, my God.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Atomic batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
Welcome to episode 20 of the Cup of Joe Radio Show. I am your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio. We hope you are having a good evening. This is Wednesday, I suppose, technically. It's 12:08 a.m. I finished a while ago a Tuesday shift. I came home early because my feet are friggin' killing me. I bought new shoes over the weekend, steel-toed shoes. And, you know, if you've ever had a break in shoes, you know what a pain in the butt it can be. And I've been wearing them for the last 2 days, and I've got, like, some blisters on my toes, and my feet are hurting. My wife is in major sympathy mode right now. So I came home a little early tonight, and I was surprised that the boss wasn't too upset with me for coming home early. I guess it happens from time to time. There's not much he could have done about it. Frankly, I could barely stand. I have to stand up all day at my work, which I don't mind so much. But anyway, I wanted to tell you something about when I went to work Monday. I went into work a little early on Monday because I had to get some cash. My wife is going to see the doctor tomorrow morning. She's leaving very early. She's got to go get some dental work done that she's needed done for a long time. But when you're destitute and we're not even on Medicare, and she doesn't qualify for my insurance for reasons too lengthy to explain here, you have to take what you can get. And she actually, what was it, about 3 weeks ago that she had an examination, and the doctor took a look at her mouth, and, you know, her teeth has been bothering her for a long time. And anyway, I had to get some cash for her medical exam, which is tomorrow morning. And so I went in there, and I got some money out of the ATM, and I got one of the brand new $20 bills, the one that's kind of, it's not really quite green, it's got all these holograms and stuff, and in little red letters all over, it's got 20, 20, 20, 20 written. I mean, it's really, really precise, and they're doing, you know, they have to do all these things to prevent people from counterfeiting, because, you know, let's face it, with scanners and with all this electronic equipment, counterfeiting money is almost as easy as putting together a radio show, slapping it together, and tossing that on the airwaves for anybody to listen to, you know, on the internet. So, anyway, before I went to work, I went to Taco Hell to get something to eat. Taco Bell, there's one near where I work, and it's on the way. So I stopped in there, and I got a couple of steak burritos, which is I like the steak burritos. And I show the 20 to the lady that works there, an older lady, very nice. And she's like, I don't know, is that a real bill? Are you making those in your room someplace or something? I said, if I was making 20s in my room, do you think I'd be eating a Taco Bell? You know? I mean, get real. I'd be going to one of those places where they wouldn't even have prices on the menu, you know? And when in $400 steaks. You know, and some of the other ones that were there, like I said, man, if I had that kind of money, I'd be eating at Red Lobster all night. I have news for you. Red Lobster is like a low-class place as far as steak places are concerned. There are a lot better places than Red Lobster, that's for sure. But, you know, when they say, man, you work hard, you make that kind of money. And I told them, I said, man, if you work hard, you'll never make that kind of money. That's the plain, honest truth. You know, I didn't have the heart to tell them that I work probably half as hard as these poor guys do work at this fast food joint, and I make about twice what they make. And that's sad, you know. And I've discovered in my life that the more money you make, the less you have to work, at least as far as physical work is concerned. The real money is if you can find ways to make money for somebody else. And for people without college education, the best way to do that is in sales. And I'm a horrible salesperson. So I've been talking to some people, changing the subject slightly. I've been talking to some people about the show. And by the way, I got an email from Ben Birch tonight from the White Rose Society. Wonderful man, wonderful site, whiterosesociety.org. And he was showing these statistics for what shows are downloaded. Now, I can't believe this is right, and I've sent him an email to confirm it. But apparently nearly 1,000 people downloaded the last show, show number 19. And I'm like, huh? And that only got put up like 2 days ago. So I'm like really freaking that many people are listening. And I'm really, really glad to do that. But as you know, while I love doing the show, the truth of the matter is I do want to improve it and do more things, because just listening to someone, you know, just go on and on about stuff is fine. But really it helps if you have somebody to talk to, and if you have some issues and stuff that you want to talk about above and beyond the blather that goes on in your everyday life. And that, you know, that's cool, because I like to talk about my working life and I like to talk about other people's working lives and all that. So I am in the process of getting together a crew. So they have to live here in the Atlanta area. That's really the only qualification at this point. And I need like someone who can act like as a producer and someone who can act like as a publicist and stuff like that, because I'm lousy at publishing. You know, I can do all right for the show publishing. Publishing, is that a word? There's no such word as publishing. I'm bad at publicizing. Publicizing is what I'm bad at. I like doing the show, and I like putting the show together, but I am really horrible at advertising it, at getting the word out. So that's why I'm very grateful for like the White Rose Society, because they do their own little publicity, and a lot more people listen to their site. On the blog, and that's cupofjoe.blogspot.com, and I want to direct you to that, cupofjoe.blogspot.com. Every show I have an open thread for each show. Please, I ask people to comment about the show so that we know. I know who's listening and what they're thinking about listening. And I'm also April, and April is actually not quite started yet, but I'm getting a little early jump. I'm asking people to help out donations-wise. But I'm not going to say anything more about that, because I really don't like asking people for money. It's kind of rude. But on the other hand, I would like to make some changes to the show. So if you go on the cupofjoe.blogspot.com, on top it says, what's a cup of joe worth to you? Click here to find out, and click on the spot, and it'll tell you more information. Basically, I'm just looking to upgrade my computer system, because, well, even though I'm working and I'm doing better than I was, say, a few weeks ago, I'd still like to improve the computer and get a few more things so I can do, like, remote locations and interviews and things like that. And now I'm gonna break away from my normal server to ask a favor of my lovely wife, who's lying there reading a comic book. Honey, could you do me a favor and get me a glass of sparkling water? Thank you very much. I don't want to have to leave the show. See all the high-quality, professional, show business-type stuff that we have going here, asking my wife to get me a cup of water. So, I went to what, you know, actually, I was very surprised. Don't use one of those cups, honey. Yeah, get me a new one. Thank you. I have these plastic cups that we buy to throw out, basically. We buy them and we use them from time to time, and we throw them out. But anyway, I was very surprised that my boss, Kelly, did not raise any serious objections to me leaving a little earlier tonight. I basically left around halfway through. It took about a half a day. But seriously, I could not stand. I really could not stand. The shoes were really cramped. And I should have got a pair of shoes that are half a size larger, because these steel-toed boots, they tend to be a little constricting sometimes. And so it's going to take a while for these shoes to break in, but I needed to get out tonight, and I'm going to basically bring another pair of shoes tomorrow, and if I have to switch out, I'll switch out. But it's something I noticed, and I'm not saying this is necessarily true of Kelly, but I want to ask everybody out there, anybody who's listening to the show, thank you, my dear. That's my wife. I love her. She's wonderful. Ah, good old sparkling water. I do want to ask everybody out there a question. Those of you who are like me, just working slobs, doing whatever for a regular paycheck or a semi-regular paycheck or whatever, do you think your boss is dumber than you are? Did that ever occur to you? Were you brought up under the impression, like I was, I was brought up under the impression that people who are above you, and not necessarily just bosses, but, you know, teachers and clergymen and stuff like that, you know, should at the very least be more intelligent, more mature, or just better in that shape, in that way, than you are. And I've had that with a lot of bosses, and I'm thinking, like, how in the hell did this person get in the position that they are? What did they do? Who did they blow? What did they blow? And I was wondering if any of you out there had the same questions I had about that, because I can't imagine how some people got into the position that they got into. Now, when I got my one and only management position, the big decision I made at the very beginning was not to be like every other piece of crap manager that I had. I can say piece of shit. It's my radio show. This is not going out in the air, damn it. Don't give me no funny looks, wife. she doesn't like it when I curse. But you know what? It's the friggin' internet. And I can curse if I want to, damn it. But I just wonder if anybody out there has any stories or anything they want to say. We'll call it stupid boss stories. Email me your stupid boss stories, and I will talk about them, and I'll put it up in it. Because, you know, it just amazes me how some people can be put in positions of authority that don't have more than 3 active brain cells. I had a boss of mine who was reading a memo from the company, and not only did he read it badly, he had trouble with simple words like compliance. Okay, granted, maybe compliance may be a little difficult to pronounce, but it's not compliancy. And it's not comrade. It's compliance. Say it. It's very clear. C-O-M-P-L-I-A-N-C-E. Say the word. Or as I'm constantly screaming, in fact, I saw Whoopi Goldberg scream this on her new show. Whenever I hear George Bush speak, it's nuclear. It's not nuclear. Nuclear is what Homer Simpson says. Oh, but then I forget. We have Homer Simpson for president. Sir, the weapons of mass destruction are not in Iraq. Don't! Well, at least if we had Homer as the president, we'd have Marge as first lady. By the way, I noticed something. My roommate shocked me. There's a men's magazine. Now, I am not a fan of this particular magazine because, quite frankly, I think I think the magazine is for your typical immature guy types, and I am not your typical guy, and I'll get into that for a second. Hang on a second. But the men's magazine is called Maxim, and it's your pretty atypical guy magazine that's just short of Playboy. They won't show nudity, but they'll show very scantily clad women, and they'll have talks about, well, but guess who their cover girl was this week? But none other than Marge Simpson. And I'm going to admit on the radio for the first time that I kind of have a thing for Marge. Not, you know, because she's a cartoon character, but because we all know a lot of Marges out there. Now, what I found out about this particular issue of the magazine was that the real cover girl is Paris Hilton, who some of you might know is the heiress of Hilton Hotels, a very young, supposedly beautiful teenage girl. Quite frankly, I'm not that attracted to her, Well, she's not that attractive to me. I'm sure that she wouldn't find me very attractive, at least mostly because I have no money. But she is like the cover girl and the main person for this issue. But they have a few of them that have Marge Simpson on the cover. And I like Marge Simpson better than I like Paris Hilton. And I'll tell you what. First of all, I'm an anti-guy. I do not drink beer. I do not smoke. I do not treat women like property. I am not a homosexual, although I support homosexual rights with every fiber of my being. And my wife can attest to the fact that I am not a homosexual. And she also can attest to the fact that when we have our moments of intimacy, we are both quite fulfilled. Thank you very much. But I love my wife, because she is in her own way like Marge Simpson. And if I had the choice between a Marge Simpson and a Paris Hilton, I would take a Marge Simpson any day. And that's because for someone like Marge and for someone like my wife, the type of passion that they have and the type of love they give is very, very real. And when they give themselves to you, they give themselves totally. Now, that's something a lot of, you know, the guys, the beer drinking, you know, shoot everything, rednecky kind of guys, you know, who like to pretend that they're real tough things, you know, and all that stuff. What they don't understand is that the type of thing that Paris Hilton offers is phony. She gives it away so much and so often that it basically cheapens what it is. But you know, it's really, I'm not necessarily putting down Paris Hilton in the sense of saying that she should cover up and be demure and all that. No. In fact, you know, I think it's great that she does what she does, and I'm all in favor of people being free and open. But let's not kid ourselves here. If it really depends on what you're looking for. If you're looking for a quick screw and you can manage to land someone like Paris Hilton, then more power to you. Okay? Or if she can manage to land someone like you, to be the reverse, to say the reverse, if I could only speak. Stop looking at me like that. But the thing about it is, when she opens her legs to people, she is more interested in what I like to consider the more frivolous aspects. How much money do you have? How handsome are you? And while these are important things in and of themselves to a certain extent, if you're looking to have a real relationship that is fulfilling in every sense of the word, then you want a Marge Simpson. You want someone like my wife, because you know that when you have something like that, it is so open and free. What's great about my wife and I is the fact that we just enjoy each other's company very much. We have a great time together. It's like being married to your best friend. And I have news for you younger folks out there who, you know, maybe haven't had sex yet or have only had some minor experience with it. You know, the truth of the matter is that you can't do that every night. And you can't do that all the time. And especially for guys, once the act is over with, generally the last thing you want to think of is sex. I mean, there's a huge letdown after that tremendous high. And, you know, once that's over with, then you have this person here, and the question is, do you want to be with that person anymore? Was that person just an object to you to satisfy your pleasure? Or are you sharing something with that person? And there's nothing wrong with that. You know, and I want to make it very clear. I don't have a problem with premarital sex. I don't have a problem with sex for, what's the word, for entertainment, sex for the sheer enjoyment of it. Let me tell you a story about Dick Van Dyke, by the way. This goes to show what mores are and what attitudes are in this country. Now, you know, the Dick Van Dyke Show, originally the one with Mary Tyler Moore, one of the great shows on television, and not long after that show was off the air, he had another show called The New Dick Van Dyke Show, which was with Hope Lang, where he was played some television guy out in Arizona. Hang on a second. More water. Or omizu, as they say in Japan. Omizu. At any rate, the couple in the TV show, Dick Van Dyke and Hope Lang, and I don't know the names of their characters, I don't remember, they had a young daughter, and she was like maybe 9 or 10 years old, I guess. And there was an episode where the daughter accidentally walked in on the parents making love. And she was like, ooh, gross, you know, which is how kids normally are, but she went around thinking, oh, she's going to have a baby brother or, you know, a baby sister, you know. And the parents, you know, Dick Van Dyke and Hope Lang had to explain to her that sometimes mommy and daddy do that just because they enjoy doing that. And she's like, you mean you two did that just because, you know, you like it? I said, well, yeah. Yuck, which is a typical kid's reaction. Well, the network couldn't handle that, and they basically censored that part out of the show. And this made Dick Van Dyke furious. And this is Dick Van Dyke. He's hardly a porn star. You know, he's one of the nicest, decent, most talented people ever be on television and in movies. I mean, the list of stuff that he's done that has been successful goes on and on. And he was so angry about it that eventually, you know, it wound up breaking up the show. And that's just, you know, the example. So I wanted to make it very clear that I have no objection to recreational sex. That was the word I was looking for. Isn't it remarkable that I do a radio show and I can't find the damn word that I'm looking for? But I have no objection to recreational sex, and I have no objection to Paris Hilton showing herself off now. I mean, hey, it's publicity. It's what Madonna did to make her famous. Of course, she happens to be a fairly decent singer. I don't care what anybody says. I mean, I'm not her biggest fan necessarily. I mean, I'm not, you know, a big fan of her music in particular, but I do admire the fact that she goes out there and she works very hard and she tries to, you know, make a name for herself, and she's done very well. She's very successful. But anyway, enough about that. Let's have a little music, and we'll be back with the Cup of Joe radio show.
Thank you.
Stephanie, Rock the Planet, my three-song tribute to TV themes from Japanese animated shows, or anime. For those of you who are not aware of that, I'm a big fan of anime. We had Dave Merrill on here a while ago from Anime Week in Atlanta, and we're going to have him on again sometime in the future. Maybe to talk about anime, but maybe just to talk about politics, because he talks about politics and work and business stuff, of course. Rock the Planet is from the television series Urusei Yatsura, which is by Rumiko Takahashi, who is one of my favorite animators. She's made several shows. Before that, we had Sailor Moon opening theme. I don't know who sang that. Sailor Moon is not one of my favorite shows. My some of my stepsons like it, but it's not my cup of tea, really. But it's got a good opening theme, and I'm more there are some shows that are like that. You know, I like the opening theme. And we began it with Cinema, which I don't know also... I also don't know the name of the person who sang that, but that is from Meizu ni Koko, which is one of my favorite anime shows because it's a real, just working class type of deal, and it basically revolves around a group of people who live in a boarding house, specifically young Godai Otonashi. No, Otonashi is Kyoko's name. What am I saying? Godai, who is a, begins the series as a ronin, which is basically someone who's graduated high school but has yet to pass their college entrance exams, and, he is in love with Kyoko Otonashi, who is the manager of the boarding house. And it's a very, very good series, and what I like about it is it's about real people and no superpowers, no nothing fancy like that. It's just a nice love story compacted into 96 episodes. How you doing? This is the Cup of Joe radio show. We're in episode 20. My name is Joe Vecchio. I'm your not-so-humble host. It is, technically speaking, it is Thursday, although I just finished Wednesday's work. It is 1:30 a.m. on Thursday as I'm recording this. And I record, try to do two shows a week as best I can. And sometimes it's hard because I do work at a very physical job. I work in a steel plant, as some of you might know. And sometimes that takes a little bit of a toll on me. And yesterday in particular, when I recorded the show, I mentioned that I had left work a little early because I had just bought these new shoes and they were breaking them. I was breaking them in. And it's a little more difficult when you're standing all day. If I had a job where I was sitting all day, I might have been able to handle it. But what I did today was, is I put on two pair of socks. And this would, to me, hopefully accomplish two things. Number one, allow me a little more cushioning. And number two, stretch the shoes out a little bit faster. And it seemed to work. I had to actually, at lunchtime or so, I took one of the pair of socks off. And it became a little more comfortable. My feet still hurt, but it wasn't anywhere near what I was experiencing yesterday, and it was very, very bad yesterday. My wife today, now let me explain this. Now, my wife is not in the best of health. She is, in fact, a cancer survivor. My wife is 44 years old. She's 2 years older than me. In fact, exactly 2 years older than me. We both have the same birthday. And she has gone through a lot in her life, like I mentioned. She's had to work very hard. So her health is not great. She's tired a lot. And she has a lot of just problems that are mostly due to the fact that her body is worn out. But she's also a cancer survivor. And having gone through the chemo, and she's out of remission. She's been out of remission, which is wonderful. She's been out 5 years. She's been out. So been a free of cancer. And once you're 5 years, you're considered cured, which is wonderful. It was fortunate for her that it was caught very, very early in the type of cancer she had, which was breast cancer. The type of breast cancer she had was not particularly serious. But she had to go through the chemo and the radiation and all that stuff, and that basically messed with her body somewhat, and some parts of it are deteriorating. And one of the things that's deteriorating is her teeth. And she's been having a serious problem in the last few months or so because she hasn't been able to get... Basically, she just needs the tooth pulled up. And we haven't been able to afford that. And she's been on Medicaid and Medicare and all that stuff, and we simply have not been able to afford to have this procedure taken care of. So, you know, basically she's on the dole now, you know, on the dole as far as Medicaid is concerned. But when you're like that, when you're poor and destitute in this country, you know, your medical care is nowhere near as good. I will say this, though. She's been going to Grady Hospital, which has a kind of bad reputation here in Atlanta. I don't believe I've ever been down there except to visit and maybe pick up her prescriptions, which are a pain in the butt anyway because there's so many people out there. You have to actually have to call and make an appointment to go down to the pharmacy down there. But anyway, she She has been treated very well there at Grady Hospital, and Grady's got a bad reputation, and probably it's just because people don't get, you know, the on-the-spot care, and there are delays because they're a crowded hospital, and a lot of poor people have to go there, poor people like my wife, and she has to wait a long time when she goes there. Now, when she was there a while ago for a general checkup, and the doctor there took a look at her teeth, and they said, yeah, these, you know, we have to do something about this as soon as possible, and of course, for Grady, as soon as possible is like a month down the road, so the poor woman... See, her tooth, her left molar in the back is very so badly deteriorated that it's you know, the nerves are frayed, and she, you know, it's very, very painful. Every time she eats anything, she has to basically brush her teeth really, really thoroughly to clear everything out, because once stuff gets in there, forget about it. You know, you don't want to risk an infection. But she's got to do that, and then she's got to she puts some Ambisol on it. And then she takes some pain pills, which basically puts her to sleep. So her life is, you know, pretty much shot. I mean, she can't do much of anything. Every time she eats, basically, it means sooner or later she's going to have to lay down and sleep, because the pain medication is fairly strong and it puts her to sleep. So we've been trying to get this thing dealt with. And today she was supposed to go over there and get the tooth extracted. But as is the case, unfortunately, because everything is going, you know, bass-ackwards, she couldn't get it done today, because one of the other things she has wrong with her is that they discovered that there's some sort of problem with the heart, with her heart, and she needs to see a cardiologist. But they scheduled a dentist thing first. Unfortunately, they couldn't give her anesthesia until they understood a little bit more about what her heart condition is, because they don't want to give her the wrong kind of anesthesia that could damage her. So it's a simple procedure. It would have taken, you know, maybe 15, 20 minutes to get the tooth out, but they couldn't do it. So they had to reschedule it for next month, and in the meantime, she's got to go see a cardiologist so she can get that taken care of, so she can get the other thing taken care of. You know, that really pisses me off, because I love my wife, and I hate seeing her in pain. And unfortunately, because we have the system that we have today in this country, it just takes forever to get anything done unless you have a ton of dough. You know, and unfortunately, I cannot cover her for my insurance, because... legally, she's still married to somebody else. We just need to, and again, this is a matter of money, although there are legal aid, and actually, part of it is just because she hasn't been able to take care of it. Partly of that is because she's always tired and really can't travel very easily. You know, she just needs to get this situation taken care of so that we can get legally married. I mean, we've been together for 3 years. It'll be 3 years May 15th. And, you know, it's just a matter of getting the paperwork done so that then I can put her on to my insurance, and she'll have less of a problem with that. She's also applying for disability because, frankly, she cannot work. She cannot work in her condition, and she needs, there are other things that she needs to get taken care of, some other operations that she needs to have. They're not directly affecting her life, but, again, there's something that needs to be done, and she just can't do it. And that's just a damn shame in this country that, you know, we have to put up with stuff like that just because we're poor. And I think about things like this a lot because, you know, the right-wingers always talk about personal responsibility, and if you can't afford it, you don't deserve it, and all that stuff. And not all of them are, you know, as bad as, you know, some people are worse than others on stuff like that. And it's always been my impression that there are certain things that should be above and beyond the sheer drive for profit. I mean, medical is one thing, you know, to me, that really... you should try to take the business aspect out of it as much as possible. I realize there's always going to be economic realities. Things cost X amount, and stuff has to be provided for. But surely we can figure out a way in this country, you know, how to deal with that. I loved, you know, one of the things I liked about Dr. Dean's campaign, Howard Dean's campaign, is that he talked about the first step. You know, he wanted to do it in increment because, let's face it, people in this country at this point are not going to go into any kind of national health care plan. I mean, the one that Clinton wanted was defeated very handily because the hospital lobbyists and the pharmaceutical companies who were looking to make a fortune, then the fortune that they're making now, actually, who were seeing that, did everything they could to prevent that because it meant that they weren't, you know, going to be able to make a lot of money. And it's unfortunate because... it really takes away from the ability to do things. I mean, so many things happened because of that. The Vietnam War, I believe, and the assassination of President Kennedy, I believe. And again, I can't prove it, and I'm not, you know, saying, but it just, and I'm not making any definitive claims, but I personally believe that that President Kennedy was killed because he was looking to downgrade our presence in Vietnam, and there were a lot of people who were going to make a lot of money on the war, you know, the arms manufacturers and the napalm manufacturers and stuff like that, and that they simply couldn't tolerate the fact that we were not going to do that. So, you know, that all ties into it. And it's the same thing with the hospital stuff. I mean, the pharmaceutical companies, you know, they don't just want to make money. They want to make ungodly sums of money. And not for their workers, of course. The people who work in the pharmaceutical industry on the low end, they're not going to get crap. They're going to get the short end of the stick while the people on top make a ton of dough. You know, and that's why we have the system that we have. And I can't help but wonder how we can work something out so that we can get some of these things done. I mean, public transportation is another thing. That's one of my big pet peeves. As a matter of fact, my old sparring partner, Beachon, and we fight all the time on the web because, I don't know. I don't know why we fight. We don't really have to fight. Bruce is an intelligent enough guy, but he has such wacko ideas about life and the universe and everything. Of course, he says the same about me. But he and I are both agreed on this thing, is that we were both very strong believers in public transportation, specifically rail. You know, but that sort of thing just isn't going to get done. And especially around here in Atlanta, because you have a public transportation system that people simply assume, or they say, that it's got to make a profit, it's got to show profit. And so why? It's not supposed to show a profit. It's a freaking public service. You know, you don't worry about profit. You know, it's that attitude that keeps MARTA fares as high as they are. MARTA charges $1.75. And MARTA, for those of you who don't know, is Metro Atlanta Rapid Transit Authority, although the racist bastards in this city call it moving Africans rapidly through Atlanta. And that's true in the sense of mostly black people ride the buses. I mean, down here in the South, public transportation was designed mostly for the maids and the servants to get to where they're working. And if they drop that altogether, then the whole system would shut down around here because a lot of people who do regular jobs would not be able to get the work. But at any rate, the reason why the fares are so high is because MARTA gets less of its money from taxes than any major city in the country. Like New York, Boston, places like that, the operating fares for their public transportation system come primarily from taxes. And I think in New York and in Boston, it's something like 70-80%. I don't have the exact figures right now. But in MARTA, it's only something like 40% come from taxes. So they have to raise 60% of it. And people ask me how I would deal with things. Well, if I had my way, and if I had dictatorial powers, you know, first of all, I would tax the fuck out of the roads and lower the fare. I mean, let's face it, you know, the public transportation suffers because people want to pave over every fucking square inch of this town so they can drive cars all over the place. And cars cost more money overall because you have to keep fixing the roads. And there's always traffic congestions. I mean, I hear the right-wingers, you know, the people on the local radio here, they're always making fun of public transportation. But they'll go ahead and they think it's perfectly wonderful to sit in a fucking traffic jam for an hour and a half a day trying to get to work. You know? And I keep wondering how we can make a better world so where these things, you know, aren't as much of a problem. I mean, there's always going to be problems, but, you know, I keep wondering if we can't build a world where we at least have different problems. And I think that's the problem with, you know, being a working person. I mean, this is another thing that Beachon talks about, how, you know, you should be proud and, you know, starve in the street and be free rather than take somebody else's money or paycheck or something like that or be a slave to somebody. And I'm like, you know, that's a little extreme, but I understand where he's coming from. And I look at this, and not just from an American point of view, but from an overall economic point of view. I mean, here's the blunt reality. There's 6 billion people on this planet. And in order for each of them to survive, they each need a certain amount of food and water and a certain amount of clothing and shelter. And I'm not even talking about luxury stuff. I'm just talking about the basic necessities. And you of course want to do more than that, but just the basic necessities. All this stuff has to be provided for. And the main way people get to provide for that is to go out and work for somebody else. And that eventually leads, and has always led, to basically a distribution of wealth to just a few people up at the top. It's just a question of how much of that wealth is up in the top. I mean, the percentages, you know, try to balance out. It was really, really bad in this country back in the 20s when the percentage was very high at the top, and it was spread out very far and wide among everybody else, and it's returning to that now. It was at its peak probably for working people in about the late 60s, early 70s, you know, as far as the distribution is concerned. And ever since the Reagan Revolution, and actually since before that, the origin point, as far as I'm concerned, is the SunPAC decision by the Federal Elections Commission that basically allowed companies to not just create but fund with their own money political action committees. And there were corporate political action committees before this ruling, but since the corporations weren't allowed to use their own money to fund them, they were limited as to what they can do. Well, the FEC basically said, well, they can do that. That's the SunPAC was the name of the company that wanted to form its own political action committee, and they challenged the FEC, or they asked the FEC for a ruling on it, and they ruled in favor. Now, I think there was something like, there were a couple of dozen or so corporate PACs before this law. Within like a year after it was passed, there were over 1,000 corporate PACs, and there you can start to show where the downfall of the American worker begins, because with all that corporate money, they were able to influence politics and influence the news, you know. But, you know, basically they got into politics and they got in strong enough so that they were able to undercut regulation of the news industry and other things and turn it into what we have today, which is crap. Carl Bernstein, one of the guys from the Washington Post who helped expose Richard Nixon and the things that he were doing, and by the way, the things George Bush are doing are far worse, but that's a topic for another discussion. You know, he calls it just garbage and gossip, which is basically what it is. If you listen to the news, and if you see what's going on in the news, it's really all that. And there's not, you know, there's very little substantive reporting out there. And people don't want that. And again, it's another one of those instances where they keep talking about making a profit. It's got to make a profit. The news isn't supposed to be a for-profit thing. The news is a public service. And you can't have a functioning democratic society without the right information. And what we're getting right now is just basically propaganda. And especially if you're talking about Fox News. But again, this is the topic for another discussion. And it just, I wonder how, what would happen if we somehow found a way to have a moneyless society, in the sense that all of the basic needs were provided for and success or failure had little to do with personal wealth, you know. And the truth, you know, you have to ask yourself, and each of you listening to the show, ask yourselves if you would work for a living if you didn't absolutely have to, if you would do what you're doing, not if you wouldn't work for a living. There are a lot of people who would still work for a living. I mean, I do things, I was doing stuff when I wasn't working. In fact, I was in some cases working a lot harder, when I was laid off of work than I was when I was working, because some jobs, you know, you don't really do a whole lot. And, when I'm at home, I'm always writing or, you know, keeping up with things or doing the blog and stuff like that. And it may seem like it's nothing, but it's a lot of work. And for those of you who wonder why I never post on my damn blog anymore, it's because I've got a bit of writer's block, and B, it takes a lot of time. And like I said, I have a very physical job, so it's difficult for me sometimes to get the energy to write. And it's a little easier to talk about stuff. But I wonder about these things. How can we build a society where someone can dedicate their lives towards a goal without being interrupted by having to make somebody else rich, which is basically, if you're a working person like myself, you're working to make somebody else rich, because you're certainly not getting richer off the deal yourself. And, you know, it leads to a lot of other problems. The Bible says that love of money is the root of all evil, and I want to make sure that's clarified, because money is not the root of all evil. Love of money is the root of all evil. And I also hearken back to what Theodore Roosevelt said in his New Nationalism speech. And he said, progress is the constant struggle between those who possess more than they have earned and those who have earned more than they possess. And I think someone like George Bush has certainly possesses a lot more than he has ever earned in his life. Everything he's ever earned in his life, he's earned because of his family name. You know? And again, I also want to reiterate that I don't have necessarily a problem with someone growing up into great wealth. I mean, you know, it's really none of my business whether or not someone is born wealthy or earned it on their own merits or stole it or whatever. Well, maybe if they stole it, maybe it's my business. But, you know, for the most part, it has nothing to do with being jealous of rich people, as other right, as some right wingers have accused me of, and have accused other people who consider themselves left wingers of. It's not a matter of jealousy. It gets to a point where they're using that money to influence how, you know, to have control over someone else's life. That's why I got to put my foot down. You know, and that's basically what's going on. Let the idle rich have their money. I'm not really interested in that. If they want to live a life of idleness and squalor, that's up to them. But when they use that money to make my life harder and to make your life out there harder, then we all got to put our foot down. At the very least, working people, since we're obviously not going to have a moneyless society of any kind anytime in the near or distant future that I can see, the only protection that we working people have is to hang together. Because if we don't hang together, we will surely hang separately. And I try to explain this to some of my coworkers, and they're currently too afraid to really do anything. And I'm sure a lot of you are in the same position. So that's why I urge everybody out there to go out. If you don't like your job and there's something else you'd rather do, do everything you can to do what you enjoy doing for a living. And no, you're not going to make a living watching TV and drinking beer. Would that it were. Although I wouldn't drink the beer, I'd probably have Mountain Dew instead, or my sparkling water that I like to drink. Anyway, on to more pleasant things. We'll be back in a few minutes. Have some music, listen to some music, have some fun. We'll be right back.
Well, Mr. Burns had done it. The power plant had won it. With Roger Clemens clucking all the while. Mike Socha's tragic illness made us smile. While Wade Boggs lay unconscious on the barroom tile. We're talking softball. From Maine to San Diego, talking softball. Mattingly and Canseco. Ken Griffey's grotesquely swollen jaw. Steve Sachs and his running with the law. We're talking home. Ozzie and the Straw. We're talking softball. From Maine to San Diego, talking softball. Mattingly and Canseco. Ken Griffey's grotesquely swollen jaw. Steve Sachs and his running with the law. We're talking Homer. Ozzie and the Straw.
I'll make the fucking decisions here, okay? I don't give a fuck!
Hey, come on, come on.
Don't give me any shit, goddammit! I'll make the fucking decisions! Keep your fucking mouth shut! I told you! You talk about it in my fucking office.
Then I wouldn't say that.
I'm just saying, talk about it inside. This is not the place you're talking about. Okay? That's all I'm trying to say.
It's fucking great for you to be standing out here talking to me like that.
How do you feel, dude? I wouldn't say
I don't
something.
Give a shit, Doug. I'm the fucking manager of the fucking team. I got to make the fucking decision. And I'll make them to the fucking best of my ability. It may be the fucking wrong decision, but I'll make it. Don't worry about it. I'll make the fucking decision. I gave you a fucking chance to walk out of here. I can't fuck around. We're down 2-1. If you was yesterday, it's a different fucking story. I don't give a shit. You got three left-hand hitters, and they all got fucking hits on you. Rivers, Jackson, and the fucking other guy. They all got left. They all hit. That guy that just hit the ball was the left-hander, wasn't he?
Nene Majeski, Johnny G, Eddie Juiced, Johnny Pesky, Thornton Lee, Danny Gardella, Van Lingo Mungo, Whitey Karowski, Max Lanier, Eddie Waitkus, and Johnny Vandermeer. Bob Estalella, Van Lingo Mungo, Foggy Bergamo, Sigmund Jacoby, Big Johnny Mize, and Barney McCoskey, Hal Trosky, Augie Gullman, and Pinky May, Stan Hackett, Frenchie Bordagaray, Phil Cavaretta, George McQuinn, Howard Pollett, and Early Wynn. Roy Campanella, Van Lingle Mungo. Augie Bergamo, Sigmund Jacoby, Big Johnny Mize, and Barney McCoskey, Hal Trosky, John Antonelli, Ferris Fane, Frankie Crosetti, Johnny Sane, Harry Brachin, and Lou Boudreaux, Frankie Gustin, and Claude Passo, Eddie Basinski, Ernie Lombardi, Huey Mulcahy, Van Lingle, Mungo.
Can you give us just a few basic comments about your feelings on the game?
Well, naturally, I feel bad about losing a ball game like that. There's no way you should lose that ball game. And...
But it just doesn't make sense.
What's your opinion of King's performance?
What's my opinion of King's performance? What the fuck do you think is my opinion of it? I think it was fucking horseshit. Put that in. I don't fucking... Opinion of his performance? Jesus Christ, he beat us with three fucking home runs. What the fuck do you mean, what is my opinion of his performance? How could you ask me a question like that? What is my opinion of his performance? Jesus Christ, he hit three home runs. Jesus Christ. I'm fucking pissed off to lose a fucking game. And you ask me my opinion of his performance? Jesus Christ. Ask me, isn't it? What is my opinion of his performance?
Yes, it is. I asked it, and you gave me an answer.
Well, I didn't give you a good answer because I'm mad, but I mean...
That wasn't a good question.
That's a tough question to ask me right now. What is my opinion of his performance? I mean, you want me to tell you what my opinion of his performance is?
It just did.
That's right. Jesus Christ. The guy hits three home runs against us. Shit. I mean, I don't mean to get pissed off or anything like that, but, you know, you asked me my opinion. I mean, he put on a hell of a show. He hit three home runs. He drove in what, seven runs?
Eight
runs. Well, what the hell more can you say about it? I didn't mean to get mad or anything like that, but goddamn, he asked me my opinion of his performance. See you, Joe.
By the shores of old Lake Michigan, where the hawk wind blows so cold, an old Cub fan lay dying. In his midnight hour, the toll. Round his bed, his friends had all gathered. They knew his time was short. On his head, they put this bright blue cap from his all-time favorite sport. Told him it's late, it's getting dark in here, and I know it's time to go. But before I leave the lineup, boys, there's just one thing that I'd like to know. Do they still play the blues in Chicago when baseball season rolls around? When the snow melts away, do the Cubbies still play in their ivy-covered burial ground? When I was a boy, they were my pride and joy. But now they only bring fatigue to the home of the brave, the land of the free, and the doormat of the National League. I told his friends, you know the law of averages says anything will happen that can. That's what it says. But the last time the Cubs won a National League pennant was the year we dropped the bomb on Japan. The Cubs made me a criminal, sent me down a wayward path. They stole my youth from me, that's the truth. I forsake my teachers to go sit in the bleachers in flagrant truancy. And then one thing led to another, and soon I discovered alcohol, gambling, dope, football, hockey, lacrosse, tennis. But what do you expect when you raise up a young boy's hopes and then just crush him like so many paper beer cups, year after year after year, after year after year after year after year after year. So those hopes are just so much popcorn for the pigeons beneath the L tracks to eat. He said, you know, I'll never see Wrigley Field anymore before my eternal rest. So if you have your pencils and your scorecards ready, I'll read you my last request. He said, give me a doubleheader funeral in Wrigley Field on some sunny weekend day, no lights. Have the organ play the national anthem, and then a little na-na-na-na, hey, 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 goodbye. Make 6 bullpen pitchers carry my coffin, and 6 groundskeepers clear my path. Have the umpires bark me out at every base in all their holy wrath. It's a beautiful day for a funeral. Hey, Ernie, let's play too. Somebody go get Jack Brickhouse to come back and conduct just one more interview. Have the Cubbies run right out into the middle of the field. Have Keith Moreland drop a routine fly. Give everybody 2 bags of peanuts and a frosty malt, and I'll be ready to die. Build a big fire on home plate out of your Louisville Slugger baseball bats and toss my coffin in. Let my ashes blow in a beautiful snow from the prevailing 30-mile-an-hour southwest wind. When my last remains go flying over the left field wall, we'll bid the bleacher bums adieu. And I will come to my final resting place out on Waveland Avenue. The dying man's friends told him to cut it out. They said, stop it, that's an awful shame. He whispered, don't cry, we'll meet by and by near the Heavenly Hall of Fame. He said, I've got season's tickets to watch the Angels now. So it's just what I'm going to do. He said, but you, the living, you're stuck here with the Cubs. So it's me that feels sorry for you. And he said, oh, play that Lonesome Losers tune. That's the one I like the best. Closed his eyes and slipped away. Scotty, it was the dying Cub fans' last request, so here it is. Do they still play the blues in Chicago when baseball season rolls around, when the snow melts away? Do the Cubbies still play in their ivy covered burial ground? When I was a boy, they were my pride and joy, but now they only bring fatigue to the home of the brave.
Steve Goodman, dying Cub fans' last request. And then before that we had Dave Frischberg with Van Lingle Mungo, which is all baseball players' names. And We opened it up with the something from The Simpsons that was a parody of the other baseball song that I don't care as much about because it's a little sappy, but that was really funny. And in between, we had a little lesson in baseball etiquette from Dodger manager Tommy Lasorda, the great Tommy Lasorda. And even though I was never much of a Dodger fan and still am not much of a Dodger fan, I have a lot of admiration for Tommy Lasorda. And I played those because it is the end of March and the beginning of April, and that means baseball season is beginning. Now, I'm not much on talking about sports here on the show, and I don't generally talk about sports, even though I have been a baseball fan since I was a little kid, although I'm not as much of a baseball fan now or a sports fan now as I used to be, as I've explained on other shows. But it is the start of baseball season, and actually baseball season started officially, I think it was yesterday, whenever it was, the Yankees played the Tampa Bay Devil Rays in Tokyo, Japan, an official game. They've been doing that lately. They've been playing more games outside of the United States. They had a couple of games in Puerto Rico, and I know Puerto Rico is kind of sort of part of the United States, but it's not a state, not yet anyway, and they really should be. They should be, and probably Guam should be, just for this, so that they can get representation. So we should have really 52 states. At any rate, that's a topic for another discussion. And I want to talk about baseball a little bit because I hear a lot of people talking at work and whenever we try to talk about sports. And the big thing that always comes up is players' salaries. Look, I know these guys make a lot of fucking money, okay? These guys make a lot of fucking money. But you know what? I'm going to say this right out because I get pissed off every time I hear this shit. You know, let's face it. First of all, there's a reason these guys make so much fucking money. Okay, there's a reason why these guys make so much money. Not so much because they can hit a curveball out of a baseball park and you can't. Shit, I can't. If I could, you think I'd be sitting here doing this fucking show? I'd be out there whacking the shit out of a Tom Glavine fastball. That's what I'd be doing. But I can't do that. I can't do it, you know, and even if I could do it, the odds are very much against me being able to do it with that kind of skill. Let me tell you something about this shit, man. There are not that many Major League Baseball players. There's 28 teams and only a 25-man roster on each of those teams. So you're talking less than 1,000 people in this country. Out of 300 million people, less than 1,000 get to play Major League Baseball. And in order to play at that level, you have to be very, very fucking good. Even the crappiest baseball player is better than most of you will ever be in their entire life. The crappiest guy who's been sitting on the bench, who never gets to play, they're better. They're so much better than me, it's not even funny. And to have to play at that level and to play in front of millions of people. You don't do your jobs in front of millions of people. You know, CNN, people like that, and, you know, they do live reports, and if they flub a line and flub a word, it's not that big a deal. But a guy makes a mistake on a baseball field and it gets amplified, especially if they make a particularly bad mistake, like when Jose Canseco screwed up. No, I'm not going to sit there and defend, you know, players, you know, that get snotty and stuff like that. You know, look, the real reason they get that much money is because in the 1960s, the players stood up to the owners and they stood up for their rights and they stuck together and they won. They won. And for a lot of right-wingers, they get pissed off at the players and stuff like that because to them it's an example of what their lives can be like. No, none of us, even if we start together, we're not going to make the kind of money baseball players make. That's a given. And I'm not even interested in that. But if we stuck together the same way that the baseball players stuck together in the 60s, then we could have a lot better lives for ourselves. We could have a lot better lives for ourselves. And, of course, just the political situation being the way it is right now, they are trying desperately to break the baseball players' union. You know, that's what you're hearing all this stuff about, you know, steroids and stuff like that and you know, and all that stuff. So, look, this is all an attempt to destroy the players' union because it's part of the contract, it's part of the negotiated deal that they're not to have drug tests. So they're trying to figure out a way to, you know, they're going to use this as a wedge issue to undermine the baseball players' union. And it's just symptomatic of all the other crap and all the other bullshit that is going on in this country as far as working people are concerned. And I'll tell you, I don't give a shit how much money they make. These guys are still working people. They've got to go out there and perform their jobs every day. Nobody would pay a fucking penny to see George Steinbrenner sign forms and shit all day. Nobody pays a fucking penny to see that shit. But I'll pay money to go watch Andrew Jones make a spectacular catch out in center field. Or see Barry Bonds go out there and put one into the Pacific Ocean or into the San Francisco Bay. There are things that people pay money to see. And all sports are like that. I have a particular love for baseball. I happen to think baseball is the greatest sport ever devised. Of all the major sports, it's the only one where when you're on offense, the defense controls the ball. And since there's no time limit, you can't just build up a big score like you can in some games and sit on the lead. You know, the clock is not an option. Football, basketball, hockey. You know, while I like those sports on their own merits, they're all basically variations on the same theme. And baseball is very different from that. And in baseball, you know, you have times where your best player is not the guy that's out there making, you know, the big plays. Sometimes because you have the lineup, you can't just change that lineup around and get your big hitter up all the time. They've got to take their turn like everybody else. And that's why in baseball history you have so many guys like Al Weiss, second baseman from the Mets in 1969, who hit like two homers. He didn't hit any homers the whole season. He hit two homers in the World Series. Dusty Rhodes, no relation to the wrestler Dusty Rhodes, guy from the Giants who had a tremendous World Series and didn't do much of anything else. For the Braves here, Francisco Cabrera, who got a huge hit in the 92 playoffs that scored Sid Bream with the winning run to defeat the Pittsburgh Pirates. I mean, that's just tremendous stuff, you know. And it's like I said, if you guys stick together, you know, and I talk about this with my coworker Dave, because they were very upset when the last contract negotiations came around that the people on the paint line where I work didn't get a decent enough raise. And, you know, Dave was trying to get the other guys on the finishing line to stand with him. And, you know, basically, because according to the union rule, we start work at 3:30, but the reality is that we don't start work until 4 o'clock. You know, we do the extra half hour because it's like a half an hour for lunch. And basically what Dave was trying to do was to get everybody to come in at 4 o'clock. Now, that means that they got to stop the line. They have to stop production to wait for the people to come in. And there's not much they can do about it if everybody sticks together. And unfortunately, they didn't stick together, so they never got their pay raises. They never got anything out of the whole thing. And it upset Dave a lot, and he should be upset. And I think because people are afraid to stand up and fight, that's why their times are so tough right now. And I know you always say, well, the company can move to Mexico. Well, fuck, they're going to move to Mexico anyway if they're already planning on doing that. You know, you got to take risks, people. You have to take risks. The baseball players risked a lot in the 1960s by fighting for their rights. They risked a lot. And to get just the basic rights that we have, you know, overtime pay, minimum wage, well, these may not seem such a big deal. You know, we're on the verge of losing these things. We've already begun to lose overtime pay because now people can begin to be classified as, what is it, salaried worker or something like that, or management, even though they're not really management. And therefore, they can be made to work overtime and not get paid for it, or get paid at a lower rate, not time and a half. You're losing these rights, people, because you're not fighting for them. And you sit there and you try to compete with the other workers to see who can do the most work and stuff like that, and making fun of the people who can't keep up. You know something? You're going to get screwed in the long run, because I'll tell you right out, your bosses don't give a shit. Your bosses don't give a shit. They love playing these games. They love setting workers against each other, because if the workers are set against each other, they don't have their eyes targeted on management, which is where it should be sometimes. So, you know, if you're mad at the baseball players, you've got nobody to blame but yourself. They're making that kind of money because, you know, 40 years ago, the baseball players stuck up for their rights. And if you've got a problem with that, then you're just going to have to learn to deal with it. And you got to tear out them because, you know, you're upset that they're making so much money. Well, guess the fuck what? If you guys stuck together a little bit more, you'd be making a lot more money than what you're making right now. And as long as you continue to be cowards, you're going to be continue to be slaves. And that's basically what you are. If you're too afraid to either quit your job because it sucks and get something that you like, or you're too afraid to stand up with, along with your fellow workers, even though you may not like them very much, if you're too afraid to stand up with them, then you fucking deserve what you get. And you got no right to bitch about anybody. Stand up for yourselves. As I mentioned before, if you, you know, if you find something that you want to do, that you enjoy doing, and you can get paid money, fucking go do it. To hell with your job. Just go fucking do it. And if your boss has been treating you like shit, you tell him to fuck off. You tell him what he can do with this stupid piece of shit job. And you hike your ass out of there. It'll be the best thing you ever did in your life. Because you know something? A lot of places, they won't even give a shit if you do that. If you've done that before. Because I think some of them don't even understand. Don't be stupid about it. If you've got something set up, that's great. Don't walk out if you don't have anything and you're already on the edge right now. And I mean, I realize it's tough out there for everybody. But goddamn it, take some control over your life. And sometimes that means working together with your fellow workers. You know what would happen in this country? We've had a real serious general strike for about 2 weeks. Just nobody did any work at all. Do you think these people could make any fucking money at all? If it wasn't for you, you've got them by the balls. The only reason that you're not using that power is they've got you fooled with all this libertarian bullshit that you got to be your own man. And the truth of the matter is you can't be your own man because everything is stacked against you if you're just by yourself. You work together and you can win. That's what the baseball players proved, and that's what you ought to do. And I'm going to sign off here. This is a little shorter segment than the other ones, because the other ones are friggin' 20 minutes long. But that's okay. This is Joe Vecchio. This is the Cup of Joe Radio Show. Go out there and, you know, do it to them before they do it to you. Have a good one. We'll see you next time. Bye. Oh.
make the fucking decisions here, okay?